All right. Good evening, everyone. We are here on another exciting episode of Boxed Wine and Witchcraft. You've got me tonight, Alexa, your fun co-host and witch. I am joined by Don, who is the tarot expert extraordinaire of Goddess Elite. The man has more tarot decks in his house than I think Melissa has for sale. And while we casually sip our adult beverages here, we are going to talk to you guys about the Fool's Journey and April Fools, which is coming up, and whether or not they actually have anything to do with each other. So, Don, what is April Fools?
Well, April Fools actually started in France, and they'd say, now this is, they can't prove a word of it. But it was April 1st, actually, was New Year's Day. And it came because pagans, witches, and everybody at that time, before Christianity kind of took over, they used to go by the seasons. Spring is the rebirth season. Winter is death. So that April 1st is what they use for what we call January 1st now. What happened is because they based it off the spring equinox and it was so close to the Feast of the Assumption and Easter and all of that good stuff that Pope Gregory the 13th of France changed the Julian calendar and had it created the Gregorian calendar, which gave us New Year's on January 1st. April Fool's Day, they say, came into account because at that time it was done in like 1572. At that time, word didn't travel like it does today. You don't do it by internet. No.
There wasn't a Twitter feed?
Nah, they didn't have it. So what they declared was the people that still celebrated basically the new year on April 1st were fools because they either didn't know or there was that sect that just because they changed it doesn't mean I'm going to follow it. In France, what they used to do and the kids used to do is they used to call it April Fish Day because they would tack a fish on the back of their cohorts. And when they found out, they would call it the Poison D'Arte, which means April Fish or April Fools. And then getting away from kids, they used to send people on fool's errands on that day, which really didn't mean anything or do anything, but it became a joke. It spread throughout all of Europe. And I say they really can't prove it, but this is the most sought after, or this is the one that everybody adheres to on the creation of it. But there is showing that in Britain, they were actually celebrating April Fools before the Gregorian calendar came into effect. So, but like I said, nobody can prove it. There's really no records of it, but this is the one that's most, I want to say sought after, but it's the one that most people believe.
It's most widely accepted that this is where the origins probably lie.
Right.
Well, and I imagine that's probably true of a lot of the pagan holidays and how they sit so close to the Christian holidays is, it was part of that integration. It was part of the Christianization of a lot of the greater Europe. But a lot of it also happened pre-printing press. We didn't have written record of a lot of the stuff that happened or a lot of the traditions and stuff that we typically still carry on today. That kind of puts us at a disadvantage of, we all kind of nod our head and agree that this is how this happened because we really don't have anything written down that says otherwise.
Exactly. Well, it follows with anything. It used to be that people told their life stories through words and passed it through generation for generation for generation, and they never wrote anything down.
I think that's also kind of fun, because anytime we talk about like oral tradition versus written tradition, I always think about like fisherman tales and how like the literal fisherman tale was, oh, I caught a fish this big. Well, then the next time you tell it, it got a little bit bigger. Well, yeah, because nobody can prove otherwise. That fish could be as big as you want it to be. You're the one telling the story.
Exactly.
But I had the privilege a couple years ago of actually taking like a kind of a tarot breakdown class with Don. That was a great opportunity to meet other like-minded people. It's a good excuse to keep yourself on a good schedule to learn things. And the Fool's Journey, Don, is actually the first thing you taught all of us. You wanted to go over. You kind of broke down the whole idea of the major arcana in tarot based on the Fool's Journey and what that actually means and why the Fool's Journey starts and we have April Fools. And if that would have been the new year, would have been where we start the journey, why that would correlate with the actual mapping out of the tarot cards on the journey.
Well, it maps it out a little different because of where April 1st falls. But the Fool's Journey is basically the fool's life. You can take the Fool's Journey and say it's one journey, and he starts on the horizon line, and he's our zero tarot card. It's him being brand new, naive, knowing of nothing, and his life of learning through good and bad till he completes his journey, which he completes on the 21st card. Unless you do numerology, then he's actually the 22nd card. But getting away from that, where the fool starts is, especially in the tarot, is April Fool's falls in Aries. Aries is the beginning of spring. Well, where the fool's journey is it makes it the Emperor card, which is our fourth card. So the fool has already progressed through the magician and the empress, which we hail to being our spiritual or our higher up, our divine teachers. They are from the upper planes. And then you have your empress and your emperor. We consider them in the fool's journey as basically you could say parents or the earthly mother and father. April 1st falls in the second decan of Aries, which in decans we have 30 degrees. Every 10 degrees is a decan, and every basic tarot card and everything is there. He's in Aries, our first cardinal sign of fire. And if you look at Aries, Aries is also our first zodiac. Mm-hmm. So we're still following the path that was originally there. It's the calendar that's off.
When one of the more conceptual things that I think was really helpful for me when the first time I heard the Fool's Journey and what it actually meant, if you lay, you know, all your major arcana cards out, the Fool all the way to the World, you literally can walk through the story. I remember one of the lessons you taught us was one of the more core ideas of why the major arcana has stuck around so much was because it was a storytelling technique for groups of people. That they would get together and everyone would basically take a portion of the story to tell that leg of the journey, that leg of the big epic adventure that your main character was taking. And when you actually, and I encourage everyone to go either look up a map or draw yourself one, because when you actually see it written out and see the major and minor, or I'm sorry, the major arcana broke down into those two parts, I love the fact that it runs counterclockwise, and it starts in your east, and it runs the Fool all the way to your Wheel of Fortune card in the upper half, this kind of like arc of day, conscious mind, macro thinking. And then it follows the lower cards from strength all the way back to the world in that arc of night. And you can actually follow the full story around. And when you you map it out and you look at it, it actually reminds me a lot of the like the hero stories that you see a lot of ancient and a lot of traditional fairy tales and mythologies take. Is very, so you can find those same key marks in the Fool's Journey. Like, he's actually taking you on an adventure with him as he goes through these cards, as he goes through these cards' meanings.
Well, that's what, technically, that's what they find as an acceptance to the creation of Tarot. The major arcana was created by the what we call the upper elite. And they actually, like we have many artists now, they had many artists then. And they used to do this. They would make that whole major arcana based on themselves, based on the people around them. And when they got together, that's what they did, is they passed out a card for basically every person, or a person had one or more, and they would start at the Fool and tell a tale, tell a story. That's how they occupied themselves. Then it later became a part of divination, and also later got put together with the miners.
So with the actual journey, I would love to kind of go through like kind of a brief highlight wheel of what the Fool goes on. And if you've got tarot decks at home while you're listening to this, go get your deck out, go get your major arcana cards out and follow along. Cause this is, once you start finding the thread and the common story between, you know, the Arcaday and the Arcanite, you know, card 0 and or 22 all the way around to 21. At least for me as a reader, once I learned the journey and once I learned what he was doing in those journeys, it informed my divination a lot better. I was able to grasp concepts on a little bit of a wider scale, because I could take the cards in front of me and apply those to what my client was working on, or what my client was doing. I could apply those concepts to them and their problems and their questions based on, okay, I know at this point in time, if I pull this card, this is where the Fool is. This is what he's doing. How can I relate this back to you? How can I make my client understand this is what's going on? So I'd love, I mean, I don't want to like make the podcast last for forever, but I would love to do like the highlight reel of the wheel if you wanted to.
Oh yeah. Always fun. When you got the wheel, you got to remember the Fool's the start, but he's on the horizon. Mm-hmm. You start with the Magician. He's on the horizon also, but he's on the wheel. The Fool isn't actually on the wheel. He's on what we call the horizon line. The Magician goes and moves on to the High Priestess. Well, that's your mother and father, so to speak, in the spiritual sense. They're there to teach him. The Magician teaches a manifestation, what you can bring from above and bring down to earth. The High Priestess teaches him about setting back. She teaches him about the divination and the move forward. She also runs our lunar court. When you get to the third, you got the Empress. That's being the mother. That's the almighty nurturer. And almost any tarot deck you ever find, and it's very rare to find some that are not, she's always been pregnant. Mm-hmm. Not that the fact of having children, it's because she nurtures everything. The grass, the trees, the flowers. This is him learning this. The Emperor is our power and authority. He's our first fire symbol. He moves forward. He has that tendency to learn, but he's got the tendency where he's going to be in command and move forward. This is all, you can take this from a newborn all the way up until basically school age. Take it in your own household. It's the same thing. The parents are teaching the children before they get into school. When you get to the Hierophant, yeah, he's our Pope, our priest, as they call it, but our Hierophant, he symbolizes higher education. That could be your Fool going to school. Mm-hmm. After he completes that path or that amount of time, he's going to move on. He's going to move on to the lover's card. He's going to, and he'll probably do that while he's, quote, in school. He's going to learn to deal with people. He's going to learn to deal with the opposites of himself. Good or bad, he'll learn mm-hmm. it. It's all about partnerships there. You move on to the chariot. Once you get to the chariot, that's kind of taken off. Now he's supposedly learned everything. So now it's time for him to move on and go. But we all know that nobody's learned everything in that amount of time. You're going to have your ups and downs all the way around the rest of the horn. Mm-hmm. So that's taking a quick move, and this is in the upper planes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of this, all of the first cards we've covered here, from the Fool to the Chariot, take place in what is called the Arc of Day. These are covering the conscious mind, the world at large. These are macro thoughts, things that you can actually, you know, see and measure that are out there, and actions that you're actually taking as you watch the draw, or as the Fool is taking.
Absolutely. And then depending upon which area of what we call, if you follow Rider-Waite, your next card is going to be Strength. If you follow Toth, your next card could be Justice. So that's another thing that each individual reader tends to choose where they want it to go. And there's history on both of that, but I like to utilize it as that's where the Strength card is. That's where he learns his inner power to accomplish the goals that he needs to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be much help. Bella.
For those of you who are in the audio portion, Dawn's familiar little cat has shown up to help with the podcast.
And she does. I'm not sure where Lily is, but she'll probably show up sooner or later. Once we get through the Strength, or at that time too, he learns Justice. It depends upon which way you prefer to read. I read with both decks. So the format to me doesn't make that big of a difference. But usually when we're teaching it, they follow Rider-Waite. So mm-hmm. we usually use Strength there. Once we get out of Strength, you're heading for the Hermit card. The Hermit's about choosing your path. The Hermit's about inner reflection. It's about you getting to know you so that you can actually choose the directions you want to go and what you want to do, as they call it, with your life. And then still working in the day, you're going to have 10, which is the Wheel of Fortune, which actually produces all the tools that he needs. And they say with a Fool's card that he carries everything that he needs to carry with him in his bag. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't know how to use them. Well, you know what? He's getting better at it. The Wheel of Fortune is going to bring him luck. It's going to start his path before he starts his journey into the night.
Yeah, because those first 11 cards cover from an east to west pattern going counterclockwise, following the path of the sun. You follow from the sun rising in the east, following it setting into the west. And then from here on out, the rest of the deck covers the arc of night, your subconscious, your microcosm things, personal relationships, inner feelings, you know, emotional turmoil and stuff like that. That these are, your arc of day is definitely more outside looking in, where your Arcanite is inside reflecting out.
Absolutely.
See, Dawn, I listen. I listen to everything you teach me.
Sometimes I don't know half of what I'm saying. So, but yeah, you get through. Once you hit into the night, like I said, your 11th card is either going to be Justice or it's going to be Strength. I kind of give you cross-reference to where those are. You're going to go from there, you're going to go to the Hangman. Now in the Hermit, you were doing inner reflection on what we call the worldly scale. When you get to the Hangman, and on most decks, he's hung in a tree upside down. Mm-hmm. But what it's symbolizing is him giving up those treasures of the world, those material things that you gained and you're dragging around with you. And he's not stuck up there. He's up there until he sets himself internally, emotionally, helps himself work his path that way. Then he's going to get down off the tree and keep on moving. Mm-hmm. So he's got what we call that travel log. Next card. Now, what can I tell you? It's a good card.
It's the best. It's the best card in the major arcana.
I knew you were going to come up with that one.
Says the Scorpio.
Scorpio, how about our death card? It's not
the
name.
The death card's amazing.
Huh?
It is an amazing card because it gives you time to recognize that. Yeah. It is. Like, a lot of people, doesn't matter what you do, people get scared when you turn that card over. But it's such an enlivening card, though.
That card's all about transition. It's all about mm-hmm. you growing. It's all about you changing. And the nice thing about the death card is you're actually going to do it and can do it on your own terms. Mm-hmm. In other words, you can prolong it. It's not like it, boom, it showed up and you're going to change. No, it's going to give you a progression. And this is his progression as he's lowering into it. He's going to move on. He's going to go to the 14th setup of temperance. Well, there's your spiritual quality right there. She kind of, on a zodiac, she represents religion. She hovers above, in most decks, hovers above land and water and the sky. I mean, in one of the decks that I primarily use, I use a lot of, she's there. She's pouring water. And pouring water is probably not the best way to say it, because it's actually, even though we're in the night, this is his progression. This is his spiritual progression to finding the divine. So under temperance, that water is actually coming from the lower cup to the upper cup because mm-hmm. the progression is going up. And on my deck, there's an angel in the background showing that this is the direction you're going. So this is him learning about himself, and this is him moving forward. And this is him finally breaking into his spiritual side and beginning to release it in such a manner. Then we can move on to the Devil's card. Another well-liked card. Mm-hmm. Devil's card deals with what he does. Sometimes we use it for career, or I like to say what you do because I don't like what you do in 8 hours because that's not who you are. It's 24/7 gigs. So this is all about him, what he does, how he deals with the world. It just kind of once in a while brings you, I like to say it brings you a little bit of a warning. Because if you look at the Rider-Waite deck or you look at almost any other deck that's written up there, you get the goat on a throne and he's got people that are shackled.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? The people that are shackled, they're looking up. They're not paying attention to much of anything. If they looked at their own shackles, they could see they could walk out of them at any time. It brings you that little thing that says, you know what? Only you can stop you from doing what you need to do or want to do.
Mm-hmm. And
only you can allow someone else to stop you. So it's kind of giving you a little bit of a free rein. It's turning them loose, letting them go. There's things he's got to learn. He's going to move into them, and he's going to go. You're going to move from Capricorn. You're going to move to Aquarius, and this is our, what we call our higher thinking end of the realm. And actually, the Fool starts in Aquarius because he represents the planet Uranus.
Mm-hmm.
But in Aquarius, it's all about higher thinking, moving up the ladder. It's what you're creating within your own mind, where you're taking it. It's him moving through his divine path. And he's already learning his spirituality. And he's going to have his ups and downs as he does it. But this is kind of where it takes him. And he's making his progression. And if you were able to see the chart, you'd see that he's kind of on the upswing now. You know, he's gone through the devil. Actually, we missed the tower.
Gloss over that one.
We'll gloss over the tower. The tower is another manifestation card, but it's one that you're not going to control. I like to call it the tuck and roll card, because it's going to happen whether you want it to or not, whether it is. And the tower card also represents Mars, which takes us all the way back to where April Fool's is, because Mars is the planet.
Starts in Aries.
It starts in Aries, and that's all about energy. It's all about action. It's all about moving forward. That's why they kind of called it the planet of war, named after Aries or the red planet. Tower card represents that type of action, the action that he's going to take. To move on to the moon card, reflection. You know that all of your decks of cards in one way, shape, form, or another are based on a lunar calendar. Wouldn't that be helpful for the gamblers to figure that one out?
I've always liked the moon card. The moon card always has a sense of just very intentional peace behind it, whenever I look at that card.
It does. It has that feminine quality, if you want to call it that. The sun puts out the light, the heat. But the moon, it brings everything else. It allows it to cultivate, allows it to rest, and then it moves it forward. From dusk till dawn, you're going to see both sides of that coin. You're going to move from the sun. He's going to see both sides of the coin. It's going to take him into the darkness. He's already in the darkness. He's going through his trials and tribulations at the same time. And he's working his way out. Now he's climbing back out. He's going to go from that moon. He's going to go to the stars. The stars are all about the good luck. It's all about the ease. It's all about getting better. And he's working that. He's going to hit the sun after that. Well, you know what? Energy and enlightenment is what the sun stands for. And that's the only card in the whole deck that actually stands for itself. Once you get past the sun, you're going to hit judgment. Judgment is kind of what puts you back on the plane of the horizon. Some call it karma, some call it judgment. It's been called a lot of different things. It's more or less the reaping of the souls, everything that they've been through. If you want to call it in, move it in towards Christianity, it's when your soul is risen. And this is what he's all accomplished. Then it'll take him to the world. Most world cards are either have the young woman or many other forms in the center, and they're circled. I've got cards that circle them with roses, all kinds of different things. The most common is the snake biting his own tail. Because this is a circle that goes on forever. So he makes that universe, and technically that card on the universe is back on the horizon line with the Fool. It doesn't represent itself on the outside. This, if you think about it, can be everybody's life journey. It plays out that way. The only difference is in our lives, in everybody's lives, we're on one more than one journey. We're on hundreds of journeys daily. Some are good, some are bad, some are short, some are long. It's not always true you're going to start your journey, except for basically how you started your life. You're not going to start your journey at zero all the time. You're not going to start on one. Some people will start in the darkness and end up going back to the light and come back to the darkness. Some journeys last a long time. These are where the stories, these are where the plays, these are what you see when you read with people. Mm-hmm. This is how the journey goes. Like I said, he's right now, April Fool's Day is represented by the Emperor. It's that style of learning. The planet represented is Mars. You can get very off of that, and you can say that being that he's in April 1st is in the second decan, you know what? It's representative of the Three of Wands. But if you get around to the astrology of it, that Three of Wands has a subplanet, and the subplanet happens to be the sun. All your energy and your enlightenment right there going. And basically the Three of Wands is one that says, this is what I've accomplished, because wands have kind of what you do. And I'm going to work myself on to the next level. But you can also say that the Three of Wands being where it's at is the younger fool, because he hasn't learned enough. He hasn't gained enough to be actually become that emperor in that status. As a three in the Three of Wands, he's actually young, working his way to become that status. Mm-hmm. That's where April Fool's falls. You could take any date in the calendar and it's going to fall somewhere.
And I love that when you finally do get the cross sections between tarot and astrology and the planets, and how the major arcana and the minor arcana all sit together, you do get a little bit more of a spiral. You do get more of things that'll constantly, it's almost like you could almost map each of them out in their own little orbit around each other, and where the two orbits brush against each other and what that means. And it's really nice, because it does. It kind of reminds you that a lot of the journeys we take, they're not linear. There's not a stop and a start. It's not a straight line. You are working in orbits. You are working in spirals. You're constantly coming back and brushing up against other cards, other situations, other people. And that kind of, those little ripples and those little echoes are what you're experiencing as part of your journey and as a part of your story.
Right. You're always taking detours. That's why I say not every journey starts at zero. You can start anywhere on that journey and it'll bounce you around, because some journeys are going to take you a while. Some journeys you might accomplish in a day. But you can literally take the journey to full and track somebody's life. Mm-hmm. They do that in astrology with a natal chart to start you off, to tell you where you're going or what you're supposed to be accomplishing. You know what? You can take that same natal chart and you can put a tarot card to every one of them and do the same thing, just in a slightly different manner. You can take from that, you can take playing cards and do the same thing, because technically your minor arcana is playing cards.
The deck of playing cards.
Yeah, they added the page. And if you're using playing cards, your 10 also represents a page. Not just
your pages. And I think that would be another fun podcast to have you on, would basically just doing like how to read your natal chart and how to actually map out what these all mean and kind of get that intersection between astrology and zodiac. I think that would be a really fun topic to dive into. But as far as the Fool's journey and as far as how it relates to April Fool's, like I loved learning the major arcana this way. I loved having this as a study tool and kind of a focal point for a little bit more of an in-depth study with your cards. Like if you're someone who's starting out, it's one of those things, like there's a lot of reading you can do. There's a lot of research you can do with cards. It isn't until you start turning cards over and start actually feeling what they're telling you and intuiting out what you're seeing there that's when you're actually going to start reading. But going through the journey of the Fool is a great way to give yourself an excuse to really get comfortable with your deck and your cards and really get to know each and every card a little bit more detailed, a little bit more intimately, because of how intricate they all are within the story.
Oh, that's absolute. Almost everybody, when they start, find a deck that talks to you. Forget about the myths. Nobody has to give you your first deck. Find the one that speaks to you. And you know what? First thing you should do is journal your deck.
Mm-hmm.
Take the little book, throw it aside, and see what you really feel and see how you feel, what you feel. Be surprised what the deck will tell you. Journal mm-hmm. it. Write it down. After you've gone through the whole deck doing that, then read your little book. Because they're all going to give you the same baseline anyway.
Right.
That particular artist or that author, how they depict their cards, because I don't know what deck you're using. And then compare it to what you actually got. You might surprise yourself. Because just because they said that this is what this card means, that's not necessarily true that this is what that card's going to mean for someone else. Because that's where your connection, our connection, because we're all connected with the divine and who you're reading for, you connect to them. And it might not, that baseline you might not use. You might see a color, mm-hmm. you might see a symbol, you might see something there that's going to draw you to something that technically they're telling you that they need to know.
Right.
And that's why sometimes the little book, this isn't what we call memorization.
There's not going to be a pop quiz or a test at the end of this.
I don't ever work that way. I've never hailed myself as a teacher either. I like to be more like a provoker. My idea is to provoke the side of your mind that you should actually be using, the intuitive side, not the side that talks to you, the side that gives you symbols and smells mm-hmm. and things for you to remember. That's the side of your brain you should be using, because that's the side that's technically connected to the universe.
Right. When I like the fact that thinking about that of like thinking about the juxtaposition between being book smart and being material and knowing kind of the more literal portion of things versus being that open book, being that blank slate. You know, we're given so much information all the time. We're given a lot of material and stimulus and thought, but it isn't until we're ready to take that first step on our own, and when we're ready to go, actually, I'm going to figure this out. Doesn't matter that it's come before me. Doesn't matter that the path's been there before. I'm going to take the first step. I'm going to figure out what's there. That jump. There's your fool's journey. There's your jump. You literally go from the world of I have everything to I actually know nothing. I should start from the bottom and work up, and you can get yourself back in it. It's fun.
Well, actually, the fool's journey, and what you just stated is you're actually, you do know everything. Our connection through the universe, we actually know everything. We just don't know how to access it.
We just don't know we know it.
This is your journey, is tripping into these different areas and learning how to access it. Everybody thinks they want to learn how to play a guitar, or they want to play the flute or a piano or anything like that. You know, you actually know how to do it. And if you can access that part of the universe in your brain, you can actually sit down. You don't need a book. You can sit down and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Works the same way. We don't use that part of our brain. It's very rare that mm-hmm. anybody gets beyond that, because we're taught to be drones.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at the history and the lifespan of a reader. Kids are the greatest readers in the world because they're a blank slate.
Mm-hmm.
They believe everything. they're not going to doubt it. They're not going to analyze it. They're not going to try and figure it out. When they say kids are playing with their imaginary friends, maybe you ought to think twice, because they're seeing a lot more than we're seeing. But they start that journey, and then we go to school and all that good stuff, and we get trained to be who we are, what we are, whatever our jobs are. It doesn't matter, but you kind of are trained to be a drone. Then sometime later in life, you get that spiritual enlightenment, I like to call it. And some of us become readers, some of us become psychics, mediums, it doesn't matter. But it's actually, we're relearning it. It's coming back to us. Uh-huh. We were all great seers at one time, and it got drowned out. Some of us relearned it. Everybody can relearn it.
Uh-huh.
But it's a matter of, do they want to?
Right. Do you want to actually take that first blind step and see where you land?
Exactly. That's why the Fool's card has always been said that it's the leap of faith.
Mm-hmm. So take Don, it. I love talking tarot with you. I could talk tarot with you all damn night. And I love the fact that we finally got to tease apart what April Fool's was, because it's In today's society, it is just a fun holiday. It's a lighthearted holiday. But thinking about the fact that it was once the beginning of our year, the beginning of our journey, and how it marked the beginning of spring and renewal and growth, and you could take that journey with the Fool all the way through the calendar year. I think I love the fact that I now know more. I love learning new things. And I feel like every time I talk to you, Don, I learn more, which is awesome.